Today, Watchgate, the political agenda to try to destroy Australia Post. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today I'm joined by Robbie Barwick from the Citizens Party. Hi Robbie.
Hello Martin. Happy New Year.
And to you too. It's like a New Year, old problems.
Yes, old problems. it's a week out from Parliament coming back and things are heating up. So we're going to have an interesting discussion today around this one issue, which I think is emblematic of so much that's wrong with Australia.
Yes, and I think that's really the point, that there is a whole bunch of cross currents below the surface, and yet the mainstream media just reports the very top level in line with, I guess, the political agenda that they want spin. Yep. But the fact of the matter is there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye.
Yeah, exactly. So we're talking about the Australia Post Christine Holgate Cartier watches affair. And it's taken an extraordinary turn with the release on Friday of the government had set up this inquiry by this law firm Maddox into the affair. That took about 4 weeks. They sat on the report for close to 2 months, then they released it Friday 4 p.m. before the Australia Day long weekend. You know,
putting out the laundry again late in the afternoon.
Yep. Hope no one noticed.
Yeah.
That said, I've no doubt, Martin, they timed it to coordinate. They coordinated the timing with a tabloid media second round of attacks on Christine Holgate.
Yep.
And we're pushing back, not because we're in a funny position. I mean, Christine Holgate is a fairly wealthy, you know, CEO. You know, and has had a successful career as a CEO, a well-paid Australian businesswoman. Far be it from us to be involved in defending someone like that. But we quickly saw there was a bigger issue at play, and that's our interest from the beginning. You and I did a show last year called "The Bank That Won't Be Bailed In" about an Australia Post Bank. Right? We want to turn Australia into a postal bank. And that's our interest in Australia Post. And that issue does relate to what's happened to Christine Holgate. But the way she's been ambushed, when you know the real story, is completely unconscionable. And it goes to the heart of a lot of the corruption, especially in the major parties, that organisations like us that are trying to engage in a policy debate about how to improve Australia and Australia's economy and reform the banking system, et cetera, keep running up against. And it's always hard to sort of figure out what's going on. Well, this is a case that has the potential to blow that wide open, right? And that's why we're focusing on it.
Yes, and I think it's a very good illustration of how political power and business influence combine to drive the interests of both the political party and indeed big business, but not necessarily in the interests of ordinary Australians.
No, for sure. So let's go through the elements of what happened, right? So what most Australians have probably heard of is that the CEO of Australia Post bought Cartier watches for executives, and then she denied it was a use of taxpayers' money. And because she misused taxpayers' money like that, there was a bipartisan reaction to her in Parliament, and she was forced to stand aside, and she's since resigned, right? Good riddance to bad rubbish. This woman splurging taxpayers' money in the worst recession since the 1930s. How dare she? So that's what people were told, and there was a blizzard of that kind of publicity for a couple of weeks at the time, starting the 22nd of October, and it was quite forceful, and it did force Christine Holgate effectively out of Australia Post. Now let me tell you my version of the events. Now there's not just my version. This is the truth. But I'm calling it my version because I was watching what happened as it happened and instantly became suspicious without knowing Christine Holgate at all. But I knew one piece of information, that I thought was relevant. I was watching Question Time that day in Parliament on the 22nd of October, and I saw Scott Morrison put on the most extraordinary display of outrage I've ever seen. And I could tell it was completely fake, right? He was carrying on. I am appalled at what she did. And I thought, what is behind this? And I knew that he was talking about the Chief Executive of Australia Post. Mm-hmm. And what made me instantly suspicious is because in my work looking at the history of postal banking, whether Australia Post could become a bank, the background to this idea as a policy idea in Australia, I knew Christine Holgate, as the CEO of Australia Post, had expressed interest in Australia Post becoming a bank. Mm. And that's enough for me to know that she probably had made some enemies in the private banks, right, who more than anything else want to keep their monopoly. They don't see themselves as a monopoly. They pretend they compete with each other. It's at least an oligopoly, but we regard it as a private monopoly because what they hate more than anything else is public competition, right? Whereas we think you've got to have public competition if you're going to at even a basic level to keep them honest, right? Actually, before I go on, Martin, I just want to point out we're going to tell the story of Christine Holgate here, so I don't want to spend too much time on this interview on the Australia Post Bank idea. People can see that on our website. We'll put up a lot of stuff there. In fact, the latest issue of our magazine that we put out yesterday has a whole feature on postal banks around the world and how they operate. If you want more information, go to our website, citizensparty.org.au. Also, we'll provide there's a petition for an Australia Post Bank that I'll put up, I've shared with you before. Please sign that petition and get involved in the campaign. Help us make phone calls, subscribe to our publication, the Alert Service, get involved. We can actually make this happen. The new incoming US administration includes an enhanced role, funnily enough, for the famous Bernie Sanders, who's now that he's gone from being an independent, he's got the chairmanship of a committee. He's got a bill in the Congress, along with Senator Gillibrand, for a US postal bank, right? And there's lots of these around the world. So this is not actually a controversial idea, except if you're a private banker, right? So anyway, get involved in that. But I just wanted to mention that and get that out of the way so we can talk about this particular affair. So, yeah, I was really suspicious and thought that, hang on, this Scott Morrison I do not regard as genuine in any way. Sorry. I can't think of anything I regard him as genuine on. But anyway, put aside my prejudice, this certainly was not. This was confected, affected outrage that he was putting on for a show in Parliament. And I started digging into it. If I hadn't have seen it live, maybe I wouldn't have. But I immediately found the other side of the story. The first thing that I determined was that everyone I talked to assumed that from the carry-on in Parliament, that given the extraordinary nature of last year, 2020, the pandemic recession, she had bought the watches last year. No, she bought the watches in 2018. Had nothing to do with that. And Anthony Albanese especially had been the most dishonest on this question. It was his question to Scott Morrison that set Scott Morrison off, and he put it firmly in the context of what he said was the worst recession since the 1930s, right? Now, he knew she bought the watches in 2018. He deliberately crafted a question to make it sound like she'd bought the watches in 2020. So it had nothing to do with that. And that first week, I spoke to multiple people involved in politics, and they all thought that she got her just desserts because she'd splurged money in a recession, right? As one said, oh, it's not a good look. I said, well, I had nothing to do with that. And these political people were shocked. So that's what they absorbed from the media. So why do it in 2018? What was the issue? Well, the issue was she had she'd come to the job in 2018. She had taken over from a chief executive who really was a waster of taxpayers' money, right? I'll qualify that in a minute. But if you want to call someone a waster of taxpayers' money, her predecessor was a fat cat NAB banker named Ahmed Fahour. He was on more than double her salary. He left after a decade or so with an $11 million payout. He and his executive team had dined out on Australia Post in a massive way. Their idea of a junket was in 2012, they took a $2.5 million junket to the London Olympics, right? $2.5 million. All the relevant government ministers that rained down on Christine Holgate were in a position of influence at the time and had no say over that, had nothing to say about it. The board that crucified Christine Holgate, the board of Australia Post, had let those guys have free rein. Ahmed Fahour had run Australia Post into the ground, right? Under him, Australia Post made its first loss ever. But the first loss was a big one, $300 million, and he kept racking up these losses. Eventually, to start making profits, he was selling real estate, like the Sydney GPO, right? He sold just to pad out the books, right? So he was cannibalizing Australia Post, laying off people en masse, laying off executives with real experience in delivering postal service and replacing them with finance types, this sort of stuff, right? That's what he had done. And most importantly, which I didn't appreciate until getting involved in this issue, they'd really exploited the heart and soul of the Australia's Postal Service, which is these close to 3,000 licensed post offices. And I don't know if this has an equivalent in other countries, but in Australia, the infrastructure for post offices is mostly provided by small business people who invest their own money and run it as a business with a license from Australia Post, right? Collectively, it's a $3 billion investment. They put in their own money in terms of the site, the staff they employ, etc. And the government and Australia Post take advantage of their willingness to do that to exploit them. They don't pay them enough, right? And these businesses were going broke. I've spoken to the woman who's the head of the licensed post office. So it's actually, she's based in Wollongong there, Martin, Angela Cramp. You know, the way she put it is she could never sleep at night as a business person worrying about her business until Christine Holgate came along. Because what did Christine Holgate do? She'd been the very successful CEO of Blackmores, right? And she was on something like $8 million a year. She left there to take a job at Australia Post on less than $2 million base salary. I think it's $1.4 million base salary, way below her predecessor. Now, these are still big numbers, I appreciate, but I want the viewer to look beyond the big numbers, right? It's not Christine Holgate who made the rules for Australia Post, that CEOs and executives of Australia Post, that even though, yes, we own it, get paid more than a normal government department. She didn't make those rules, right? Those rules were made in 1989 when it was corporatized. That's got nothing to do with her. So you may not like that we run the post office that way as this kind of government business enterprise that operates commercially and is allowed to compete commercially for executive talent. That's a separate thing, right? If you don't like it, let's try and reform that. That's got nothing to do with her though, right? At a minimum, just recognize that she took far less than her predecessor, and she also, and just from her own standpoint, she took a step down. Her interest though was, you know, she's English originally, and as a person growing up in England, one of her first jobs was, as a young person, a postie. Right, and so she had this sort of sense of solidarity with the people who work in post offices. She had been asked, "Look, will you come become our CEO?" And she went and did due diligence to look at the issue. She even took a trip around the world and visited post offices around the world to look at the question of how do they remain viable in this era where technology means fewer and fewer letters are being sent. Right, and what she discovered was that They kept themselves viable by combining postal services with financial services. And the financial services are very basic, but they're what the public need. They're often replacing banks who are not that interested anymore. They're abandoning their communities, and it works perfectly. And the financial services earn enough income for the postal offices that they can subsidize the postal services and keep the post offices in public hands. And she came to Australia thinking this is a good model. She sat down with the stakeholders. She sat down with the licensed post offices. She went and visited 150 post offices incognito and just checked out how they operated before she took the job. And she decided this worked. And that's what she set out to do, right? Now, in doing so, she had to make the banks pay more money. What the post office has this service called Bank at Post, and it's a good service. The post office has always provided financial services, right? The original Commonwealth Bank was originally started based on the post offices. The first branches were in post offices. So that part of Australia Post goes all the way back to then. But what's happened is in this latter few decades, the banks have taken advantage of the post office by aggressively shutting down branches in rural and regional Australia in low-income suburbs, knowing that those customers that they're abandoning in those suburbs would be able to go and keep accessing their accounts through Australia Post, right? And the queues for the Australia Post branches were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And she knew, well, okay, those banks are exploiting us. We're going to make them pay more money. And her and her executive team went and did this incredible negotiation to do that, right? And they worked nights, they worked weekends, they worked holidays. It was an intense negotiation with the banks. The banks didn't want to cough up money. ANZ refused to negotiate. No, we're not paying for something we're getting for free now, right? The other three big banks did. Most of the smaller financial institutions did. And these executives came up with a $220 million deal, $20 million of which was GST. So that was to the taxpayer earned money, $200 million for Australia Post. It made Australia Post profitable. She made sure, and this is where she's unique, right? Not any chief executive would have done this. She made sure a large part of that went to the licensed post offices, and it made them viable, right? And for that, she gave the executives who did all the work a $5,000 Cartier watch each, right? That's what she did in 2018. Now, everybody involved knows how big that deal was. The banks know how big it was. The government knew how big it was. The board sure as hell knew how big it was. All the executives knew how big it was, right? In 2018, this was not controversial or anything. And it saved Australia Post. And Angela Cramp from the licensed post office said she could sleep at night for the first time knowing that they're now viable as businesses. So then 2 years later, 22nd of October, 2020, Christine Holgate goes in the parliament for a routine Senate estimates. And out of the blue, she is ambushed by Kimberly Kitching with a series of questions leading up to a massive attack on her for buying these watches 2 years ago. You can watch the footage. Christine's looking confused. She doesn't know where are these questions coming from, right? And then suddenly she's being rounded on. Is that an appropriate use of taxpayers' money? And her first reaction was, well, it's not taxpayers' money. We're a commercial organisation. We don't receive money from the taxpayer. And for saying that, she was crucified, right? So once we found out the real story, we went public with it. Look, this was outrageous. Why is the Labor Party and Kimberly Kitching laying in ambush to start with? And then why is the government, led by Scott Morrison, sort of teeing off that to force out this person? I straight away thought, well, she's probably pissed off the banks by making them cough up, and then even further, if they knew she was planning an Australia Post Bank. There's probably something to do with privatisation here, and I've since confirmed that, right? There's definitely a privatisation agenda with Australia Post, which is easy to argue if it's a loss-making venture, and she turned it around and made it profitable again, right? And she's upset the people that way. And then the other thing about it is the board of Australia Post is fully stacked by Liberal Party doyens, and I mean top Liberal Party doyens, people like Tony Nutt, Michael Ronaldson, etc. I mean, Tony Nutt was the president of the Liberal Party. He was advisor to John Howard, etc. Really, really top Liberal Party people. But the thing is, Martin, this is where you start sort of getting a bit of a sense of how corruption works in Australia, because, with the two major parties, neither's been better than the other. But when they take power, these boards are the spoils of war, right? Labor will clear out the Liberal stack board and put their people on the board, right? And then they'll have a field day with the institution, etc. And meanwhile, the hard-working, long-suffering licensed post offices and the posties and the executives, etc., who are just trying to make the business work, are being tossed to and fro by the political games of these major parties, right? But for what whatever reason, the two of them combine in this case to smash her. Now, so there's the, that's the story, right? So, like I said, I call it my version of the events. But I challenge anybody. I mean, if you want to come back at me and tell me with everything I've told you that it was that she was unjustified in buying those watches, have a go, right? But I'm absolutely convinced she was. She did nothing wrong. She did everything right, and she's been destroyed by political machinations.
Mm. Yeah, and of course the banks who were the ones who are actually forced to pay for the services that they'd always been using at a more market rate, and the banks who could see that if Australia Post created their own bank, that would be a direct competition to their quasi-monopoly, you can understand why they would pull a few levers and strings and get a few people to dance a particular way.
Well, you and I have had a lot of experience, you know, seeing the influence of the banks. And, yep. and I must admit, let me just highlight one of the parts of the drama involving our favourite senator, Senator Jane Hume, right? The minister for the senator for bankers, we call her, because we did an episode on our show where I actually played the footage of the hearing where she was ambushed. And what's I'll just give you this one example. Kimberly Kitchen, who's such a dirty operator, at one point she attacks the chief financial officer who's there at the hearing for the fact that he didn't know, he couldn't tell her which credit card the watches had been bought on 2 years earlier.
Hmm.
He didn't have that at the top of his head.
Hmm.
And she actually attacked him for it, right, in this hearing. Even though 2 minutes earlier, not only is that a ridiculous thing on the face of it, because who would, you know, there's a lot, big organisation, Australia Post. 2 minutes earlier, she had confirmed that he'd only started working there the year earlier. In fact, he wasn't even there when it happened, and she still attacked him for not knowing. And what was the worst thing about that is sitting next to Christine Holgate was Senator Hume.
Mm.
Now, Senator Hume is, in other words, she's the minister present beside the witnesses giving testimony. It's her job to intervene when a politician starts grandstanding and tell them, calm your farm, mate, this is ridiculous, right? And I've seen it happen hundreds of times. She just sat there staring at her phone screen as if she knew what was coming and did not look up, while the woman beside her was completely crucified, right? And that's, you know, and that just confirm my suspicion about the banks. Anyway, here's why we're talking today, though, because what's more extraordinary, we did a release on this yesterday, is the government demanded she be stood aside by the board pending an investigation, and this law firm has done the investigation, and now they released their report. Everything about it is deeply suspicious. First thing is that the report that we've now been able to read, released last Friday, is very different to what well-connected business reporters reported it was back in December. Both the Financial Review and Robert Gottlieb's in The Australian had some kind of sources that gave them some kind of early insight into what was in the report, and they said it completely exonerated her, right? Now, technically it does, but in the sense that it said she didn't do anything that she could be found personally in trouble for, like she didn't do anything dishonest, fraudulent, corrupt, etc. But it actually doesn't completely exonerate her. What it does is a finding in there that backs up Scott Morrison's treatment of it, because it found that she did the wrong thing in buying the watches. So that's suspicious. Why is there a difference? The metadata. Now this could be nothing. I'm going to mention it. I already know if you're a computer expert, you know it could be nothing. Could be nothing. It could be something, because the metadata on the PDF document shows it was modified the day before it was released. Now it can be modified by something as simple as copying it, but it can be modified by something far more substantial. We don't know. We wouldn't even care if there wasn't this pretty clear sense that there's something different in the versions of the report that were reported. So that's the first thing. Second thing was the timing. The third thing was the taking out the trash timing. The third thing was on the Monday, suddenly there's this blizzard of new attacks on her through the tabloid media, and that was clearly coordinated with the government, right? They are determined to bury this woman, right? Completely determined to bury her. And so we thought, okay, what Scott Morrison's doing here is he's trying to take back control of the story. because our campaign, we called it the three R's. We said they need to release the report, replace the board, and reinstate Christine Holgate. And this was a victory for the first of those three R's. They released the report. But the report is not what it seems. So, yes, they said she didn't do anything of those really bad things, but she did the wrong thing. How did they come up with a finding against her? That is extraordinary. First, Maddox Lawyers is a government establishment, is an establishment law firm, and they do a lot of work for the government. And they actually boast on their website that they're very attuned to the political nuances of their client. In other words, we will give you the report you want, right? That's the first thing. Second, nobody they interviewed was under oath. Nobody. And that's important. Third, there's a section in there where they acknowledge that four people refused to be interviewed. A bunch of other people were only interviewed on the basis of confidentiality. And I'm thinking, well, what are they afraid of? They can't be afraid of Christine Holgate. She's in no position to punish them. What sort of atmosphere and culture is in this place that people are even afraid to talk to an inquiry, right? So that becomes a relevant factor as well. How did they convict her? They convicted her by inventing the crime they convicted her for.
Mm.
And it was this. They couldn't say she wasn't authorised to give rewards, because she was. They couldn't say she wasn't authorised to spend money, because she was. They couldn't say the board didn't authorise her to give a reward, because it did, right? The amount of money she was authorised to spend was at least, now she has discretion. There's a rule in there, the report acknowledges that under Australia Post rules, if you have a company credit card, it's assumed you are authorised to spend up to the limit of that credit card at your own discretion on behalf of Australia Post. Well, her company credit card as the CEO was $150,000, right? So they couldn't say the $20,000 that she spent on the four watches combined was in any way, the money was not authorised. So what did they say? They said, well, they reduced it down to a very narrow question. Was she specifically authorised to specifically buy watches? And, of course, the answer is no, because no organisation's rules are ever that specific. But on that basis, they said she did the wrong thing. And then they backed that up with the testimony of the board. There's eight members of the board. Six of them were there at the time. Four of those six are these top members of the Liberal Party. None of them are under oath, who all said, we knew nothing about the watches until 2 years later when this came up in Parliament. And if we had have known, we would never have authorised them, because for some reason, watches are so bad as a way to reward executives, right? Now, first of all, if they're so bad, then that board is extremely negligent for not knowing about them for 2 years, if you can believe that. But of course, you can't believe it. It's absolutely false. It beggars belief, right? Because they're not under oath, they just said exactly what serves the Prime Minister's political purposes. And then the irony of ironies, in Robert Gottliebson's article on this week, he points out that because this coordinated tabloid attack on Monday was an attack on the rest of her spending spree at Australia Post, one of the items in there is that she spent $2,000 on a Montblanc pen for the departing chairman. And the same board members who said they would never have authorised her to buy watches all signed a card for the departing chairman that was given to him with the Montblanc pen. So we're expected to believe that, yeah, buying a Montblanc pen is all right, but buying watches is not, right? It's just a joke. The third thing that they hung it on was, I think, a scam, right? They called it public expectations. In other words, the pub test. And so we posed the question, how drunk were the people who took the pub test? Because all these politicians cite the pub test because it's unverifiable, right? It is what you say it is. You tell the people one version of events and they're drunk enough in the pub, they'll rise up in arms and carry on like cut snakes for you, right? You tell them the truth and they're not drunk, you'll probably get a different outcome, right? So, yeah, so based on the narrowness of the definition of the crime, the false testimony of the board and this fake thing called the pub test, she did the wrong thing. That's the lengths they went to record an actual conviction, if I can use that term, against her that serves the Prime Minister's purposes, right? This is bogus. This is a fixed finding for a government inquiry. And Australians should be shocked not just that that can happen, but that can happen to someone who is so clearly successful at her job, right? Do we want our government business, and if we're going to have government business enterprises, do we want the best people running them? Do we want people who actually have a duty of care, right? Who don't go splurge taxpayers' money, by as evidenced by the fact they take much less income themselves, et cetera, and all those sort of things, right? In fact, under her, total executive remuneration was reduced by $40 million, right? Do we want people that make the business work, that actually, as the CEO, think, hey, a big chunk of this business is depends on the long-suffering families who run small businesses called licensed post offices. How can I make this work for them as well, right? Do we want people who are capable of thinking like that? Then we should not tolerate a political system that can so clearly crucify them in such a false way, right? And that's why we're blowing the whistle on this.
Mm. And it really is, if you stand back, Robbie, it's a demonstration, as I said earlier, of political power, you know, influence of big business, and the fact that people forget what this is actually all about, right? Which is about delivering good postal services to everyday Australians, laying the foundations potentially for an alternative financial model that would actually be beneficial to ordinary Australians and small business owners, right? That's all just swept away, and it becomes there an ideological platform to take a particular direction to serve a particular political agenda. And unfortunately, I wouldn't say this is the only case in point.
I'm sure it's not. I'm absolutely sure it's not. We, like I said, our interest in this is because we see a real potential in Australia Post becoming something that would be incredibly valuable to Australia as a provider of financial services. Have a look at this map, Martin, that I'll provide you for the screen. This is from the Per Capita, is this think tank that's sort of labour-oriented that in the middle of last year produced a report on how Australia Post would become a bank. Yep. This map shows all those red dots are post offices in Australia that are more than 50 kilometres from the nearest bank.
Yep.
And look at the spread. It's spread out all around Australia, top of South Australia, in the middle of the desert or whatever. This Australia Post, first and foremost, is a service to the public, right? This is why Barnaby Joyce got up in Parliament on the 2nd of December and said, he quoted John Maynard Keynes, "When the facts change, I change my mind." He said, "I want to say I was wrong on Christine Holgate, because when I find out the facts, I now know I was wrong," right? And it was a licensed post office who presented those facts to him.
Hmm.
Let me just quote you the former chairman. His name's John Stanhope. So he was the guy that was there all the through this Ahmed Fahour period, et cetera, and overlapped Christine. And he's the one who was there when she bought the watches. And in this report, frankly, he threw under a bus because he keeps trying to claim he can't remember knowing anything about the watches per se. But on the 24th of October in the Financial Review, which was basically 2 days after Scott Morrison's attack on her in Parliament, John Stanhope actually acknowledged, he said, these executives did a brilliant job. The deal was really, really good. He said that's why the board agreed with me that they deserved a reward. And then he said, "I do think Christine has been caught up in some kind of wider play," right? And that's the issue. And now in the actual report, he then ducks for cover and tries to, you know, let her take all the flack. But that's the most telling statement in this whole saga. She's definitely been caught up in some kind of wider play. The vested interests do not want, they would love to, you know, drive Australia Post in the ground, sell it off, right? Maybe, you know, good for Josh Frydenberg's budget, for a year or whatever. That's no good for Australia, because what's our experience in privatisation? Everything they ever tell us, right, all the things they promise, come on, we've had enough of it now, right? These are things of value that you lose, right? Because once it's private, it's got to be, profit is all everything, right? You know, nothing's more important than profit, and then it's all rationalised, and you won't see that distribution across Australia anymore, that map shows. It'll all be concentrated just in the big cities like every other damn financial institution. Right, that's what you lose if you lose Australia Post, but that's what these short-sighted politicians will do. And she's like, someone just you know, sincerely doing a job, has wandered onto a firing range, right? And for no fault of her own, just been blasted to death. And that quote from the chairman actually confirms that. So look, let's not take this lying down. Our campaign is for an Australia Post Bank. But as part of that, we are going into bat for Christine Holgate. And in doing so, it's not just her, it's the viability of Australia Post. It's the viability of the licensed post offices. Go and meet your local licensed post office viewer, right? Tell them you've seen this show. Ask them what their life is like. Ask them what they think of Christine Holgate. They love her. I've never seen anything like it. The 3,000 of these businesses, they are absolutely in support of her because they know what a difference she made to their businesses, right? And it's the whole package that we're trying to save here, because Australia needs these kinds of services and infrastructure if we're going to function as a nation.
Absolutely, Robbie. Well, I appreciate your time today. We call this Watchgate, and I think that's a very apt name for all sorts of reasons. Yeah. We'll put the links and things in below, and we'll keep an eye on this, because I do think this is an important case study in the way that Australia and Australian politicians behave, and we need to hold them to account.
We do, or else they'll just keep doing it.
Exactly. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Martin.
Cheers.